Are you trying to squeeze the starting solid food stuff into your already busy schedule? Well, I have an all-in-one, done-for-you solution that's going to take the guesswork out of feeding your baby. My online program is called Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro. It contains all of my baby-led weaning training videos, the original 100 First Foods content library, plus a 100-day meal plan with recipes, like the exact sequence of which foods to feed in which order. So if you want to stop trying to piece all this feeding stuff together on your own, I would be honored if you would join me inside of the program. You can get signed up at babyledweaning.co/program.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the most common food that causes EoE is milk. And then the second most common food is wheat or egg. And then after that is more rare and usually is high protein food like soy or legumes, peanuts could cause it as well.
Hey there, I'm Katie Ferraro, registered dietitian, college nutrition professor, and mom of seven, specializing in baby-led weaning. Here on the Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro podcast, I help you strip out all of the noise and nonsense about feeding, giving you the confidence and knowledge you need to give your baby a safe start to solid foods using baby-led weaning.
It is not uncommon for infants or toddlers to occasionally refuse food. And food refusal can be due to any number of factors, right? It could be illness. It could be tiredness. It could be that you opened the banana when the kid wanted to do it by themselves and now they won't eat the said banana. But there is a disease that results in food refusal, and it's called eosinophilic esophagitis, or EoE. EoE is a chronic allergic inflammatory disease of the esophagus. So that's the tube that connects your mouth to your stomach, but also in your baby, their mouth to their stomach. And there's a type of white blood cell called eosinophil that if it accumulates in the esophagus, these eosinophils altogether can cause injury and inflammation to the esophagus. So the damage then makes it difficult and uncomfortable for the baby or the toddler to eat, which in turn results in poor growth, chronic pain, and or difficulty swallowing. And some of the symptoms of EoE are very similar to that of reflux. And I know a lot of your babies struggle with reflux, and we've covered that here on the podcast. And in many cases, the EoE can originally get written off as reflux, which it certainly is not. So my guest today is one of the world's leading specialists in eosinophilic esophagitis, or EoE. Her name is Dr. Antonella Cianfaroni. Dr. Cianfaroni is a medical doctor. She also has a PhD in pediatric immunology, and she's a researcher, a professor, and also an attending physician. So I love to interview the people who are doing the research, but who also work with the people who have the condition. And so she is that, certainly that unique combination. And she's at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, commonly referred to as CHOP. And today, Dr. Cianfaroni is going to explain what EoE is, why it sometimes gets confused with reflux, how EoE is treated as an allergic disease, and I think you'll be surprised because the treatment and certainly the diagnosis and how you diagnose is quite different than the other allergic diseases that we've covered here on the podcast. I was also surprised to learn that boys are diagnosed with EoE at much higher rate than girls, and Dr. Cianfaroni is going to tell us why in this episode. So with no further ado, I want to introduce Dr. Antonella Cianfaroni, and she's talking about infant food refusal. Is it reflux? Or is it EoE?
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you tell me a little bit about the work you do and just your history? How did you get into this very unique area of work of nutrition and digestion and allergies and everything that you work in?
I'm an allergist and I trained in Boston Children. My history is a bit unusual because, as you can tell by my accent, I come from Italy. And then while I was doing a fellowship, I met my husband. And so we decided to relocate here. And after the fellowship, I joined the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, Well, I've been a faculty since 2007. And so when I joined, Dr. Spergo had created a big group for treating eosinophilic esophagitis that at that time it was just starting. And because in our hospital, one of our expertise is food allergy, and it was evident that then eosinophilic esophagitis was another manifestation of food allergy, then we became interested. And we do, in general, food allergy, IgE and non-IgE mediated. And so Children's Hospital has probably one of the largest pediatric population in the country. And we do a multidisciplinary clinic with a nutritionist, a gastroenterologist, and an allergist to treat these patients.
So what would you say are the symptoms of EoE? Well, maybe you could tell us what it is, if you could put it in layman's terms. What are the symptoms? And then are they different in infancy than they would be in toddler and school-age children?
So the eosinophilic esophagitis is an inflammation of the esophagus. So it sounds very different from other allergic disease, but it's basically just an allergy manifestation that happens in the esophagus instead of on the skin or in the lung. So it's a sort of asthma of the esophagus or atopic dermatitis of the esophagus. The difficult thing is that if you leave it untreated, it can cause potentially after many years some more severe symptoms like cause a stricture of the esophagus and maybe not reversible anymore. So at the beginning, the inflammation is reversible, meaning that if you treat it, it goes away and it doesn't have any long-term consequences like fibrosis, which is kind of a scar then of the esophagus. And because the esophagus is very elastic, then if you have a scar, it doesn't expand as much when you swallow. And so the food can get stuck. It's not dangerous in terms of it's not a precursor of cancer. You have time to treat it. But when you diagnose it, it's good to treat. The problem is the diagnosis at this point is just through an endoscopy where you have, especially in young children, you have to do an anesthesia. And then it's a quick procedure, very safe, but you have to get a piece of the tissue of the esophagus. And that makes the diagnosis a bit more difficult to obtain.
What are some of the symptoms when you see parents, they think, oh, maybe I need to go in and have an endoscopy? I mean, that's not something that comes to mind. What precursor symptoms would the baby be experiencing or showing?
So in the babies, the EoE is a bit more difficult to think about EoE because a lot of the symptoms in the babies are very common in the general pediatric population. So reflux symptoms like frequent spitting up or vomiting and feeding difficulties, kids that they cannot progress from a liquid to puree to solid, small pieces, and then bigger pieces. Those are the two most common symptoms. So typically, what we say is that if you have reflux that is not impairing the growth, like there is some speed up, but the growth is fine and is getting better as you introduce the solid, you don't have to worry. If you have a reflux that responds to mild medication like famotidine, which is an antihistamine that blocks the acidity, also that it doesn't have to worry. But if you have a reflux that doesn't allow you to gain weight, or if you start to have a reflux and then you have feeding difficulties, that is not the typical, you know, babies are not necessarily easy to wean from formula or from breast milk to solid. But if there are continuous progresses, then you have to be less worried. But if it's a baby that eats well puree and then in bigger food it cannot eat and there is this history of spitting up before, that's when you should see a gastroenterologist.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, if you have typical reflux symptoms, but the baby's growth is charting and tracking as you would progress, there's no failure to thrive, they're progressing through textures, that's not a problem. But if you had reflux that was persistent and impairing the baby's ability to transition beyond purees and their growth was faltering, then you would suspect EOE and do the endoscopy. Is that correct?
No, at least to see a gastroenterologist to start to discuss, because it may, you know, if the symptoms are mild, it may give you some medicine and then try to wean the medicine. And when the wean fail, then it will do an endoscopy. Yeah.
Is there anything environmental or genetic that would predispose a particular child to EOE?
So EOE, it's quite familiar. So different from all the allergic diseases tend to run in family. But if the risk, for example, of asthma, if there is a siblings with asthma, is two times more, the risk if you have a siblings with EOE, it's to have another child with EOE, it's 40 times more. And so there is like a stronger genetic component. Often it happens more often in boys than in girls. And we have found some genes that they are associated both to be boys and that they run into family. And so often there is a family history of EOE, especially in the male grandfather, dad, but can be also in the mother. But it's often more in the boys' part of the family. Yeah.
You beat me to the next question. I was going to ask you why the boys tend to get it more, but is EOE something that a child would typically outgrow, or is it a lifelong diagnosis?
You know, most of the patients tend to be lifelong diagnosis. So the studies that they have been looking at patients that fell off from treatment or they didn't want treatment when they were diagnosed, all these patients tend to present later with the more severe EOE. We reviewed our EOE cases. We reviewed one of our fellow that now is one of our attending, reviewed 3,000 charts, and were about 30 out of 3,000 that they truly outgrew. And there were typically patients that they were truly, you know, one of the triggers, one of the most common triggers of EOE can be food, especially milk or milk and wheat. And those patients that they had responded to a milk-free diet and they were symptoms-free for a long time, then about 30 patients could reintroduce the milk. And so they were outgrowing, but they are not the most common patients.
Can you talk a little bit about foods? You mentioned, you know, cow's milk protein, like which foods tend to be implicated? And then are there foods that are generally considered to be safe foods? I'm thinking like, if you think of FPIES and there's a list of, you know, kind of high, medium and low risk foods, does the same thing exist for EOE? Is it individualized? Is there no food correlation?
So no, there is like a sort of like FPIES. So they're both very empiric diagnosis, meaning that we don't have a marker that say, like when you are allergic to the peanut and you have anaphylaxis to peanut, you can look for IgE against the food, either with skin test or blood test. But this is not true for EOE. So patients with EOE tend to make IgE against food and have real food allergy. But if you measure the IgE and try to do a diet based on the IgE, you're going to fail. So the most common food that causes EOE is milk, and about 50 to 50% of patients respond to a one food elimination diet that eliminates only milk. And then the second most common food is wheat or egg. So younger kids tend to be more allergic to egg, older kids and adults more to wheat. And then after that is more rare and usually is high protein food like soy or legumes, peanuts could cause it as well.
What if you had a baby that got a diagnosis of EoE, went to the pediatric gastroenterologist, had the endoscopy, gets the diagnosis? What's the treatment like? Is it medication? Do you have surgery? Is it just an elimination diet?
The treatment can be, there are multiple choices. So you're not stuck with only one treatment. That's the good of EoE. You have choices. So medication can work or diet can work. The surgery, it's not recommended unless you have a very progressed EoE that causes a lot of fibrosis and a stricture that it's not possible to resolve because there is no inflammation and there is just fibrosis. And so the gastroenterologist can do a dilation of the esophagus, a mechanical dilation. But as pediatrician, we hope never to get there and use medication or diet to treat the EoE. So usually we speak with the family and we give the option of the drug or the diet. And we prefer to do only one treatment initially. So as medication that works for EoE is the proton pump inhibitor like omeprazole, used at higher dose for babies or kids, 1 mg/kg. And 30 to 50% of patients respond just to that. Another option are topical steroids. There is no FDA-approved topical steroids only for EoE. So we use off-label medication for asthma that instead of inhaling, we swallow. So it could be an inhaler that put in the mouth and swallowed, or the medication that goes in the nebulizer that we make it thicker with the applesauce or honey to kind of paint the esophagus, and has more or less the same side effect, even less than the one that you use for asthma, the same medication for asthma. For babies, there is no approved biologic yet. The only biologic that is approved, the anti-IL-4, anti-IL-13, is for a patient above 12 for EoE. The same medication is approved for babies, but just for atopic dermatitis. So if you have EoE plus atopic dermatitis, the biologic could help. And the diet, if you don't want the medication for babies, sometimes we suggest the diet because if they are at the stage where they're breastfed and then they're moving to a formula, then an amino acid-based formula, it's very safe. And so that could treat the EoE in babies if it's milk-related. And so milk-free diet I use especially for babies. They become more difficult as children grows up, because they want more to eat.
And it's hard to avoid that. I know one of my friends, her son has EoE to cow's milk protein. So every time he accidentally ingests some, he gets really sick. And I was curious, if you're on an elimination diet and you're a child, but you then ingest the offending food, what happens? Is there vomiting? Is there anaphylaxis? Like, how does the body respond?
No, there is no anaphylaxis and there is often no acute symptoms. That's one of the problems of the diet, that you eat and nothing happens for several times that you eat. And then over time, you start to develop more symptoms that can be belly pain, vomiting, or trouble swallowing if you're older, that the esophagus become more stiff because inflamed. And so becomes harder to swallow. So patients start cut the food in smaller pieces or gag when they eat the food. They need a lot of fluids too. And so sometimes it's tricky because the kids don't have acute symptoms. And so they start to eat once every few months, something with milk, and then once a month and once a week. And then before you know, they have kind of reintroduced the milk most of the time, and then they develop symptoms again.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Well, thank you so much. It's very interesting. I know it's not the most common or well-known of the allergic diseases, but we do get parents who ask about EOE. And I wanted to ask you in closing about gagging, because a lot of the education that we do about starting solid foods is that as a baby is learning how to eat, they will gag on food. And that's a natural and necessary part of learning how to eat. It is not an indicator that they can't handle it. It doesn't increase the risk of choking. But with an older child, if you saw persistent gagging at an age when, you know, normally the gagging resolves as the child becomes an independent eater and is proficient in feeding themselves, if the gagging persisted on into toddlerhood with some of the other, you know, maybe persistent reflux symptoms, would you suspect EOE because of the gagging?
Yeah, because of the gagging. If you have really trouble to feed, then I would suggest to see a gastroenterologist and discuss the possibility, because you don't want that this is an issue, because we have found that the feeding disorder become worse over time with the EOE and very resistant to therapy, and you don't want to push the feeding or the intervention if there is an organic reason, because it could backfire the progress.
Well, this was wonderful and very informational. Where can our listeners go to learn more about EOE if they're maybe curious or suspected in their own child?
So there are like association that like APFED, APFED, or an association of parents that provide a lot of information, with also providers that can be local. A lot of the big center, academic center, have pediatric EOE clinic. And so by Googling eosinophilic esophagitis, you may find also providers. We work at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, so if you are in the area, but in other area, most of the academic hospitals now have multidisciplinary clinic for EOE.
Well, thank you so much. It was great chatting with you.
Great to see you again. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Cianferoni. She is so knowledgeable about EOE. And if some of the things that she was describing, maybe it doesn't affect your baby, but I know just the other day I was listening to a mom who was telling me about the symptoms of GERD, well, what I thought was GERD and reflux. And then as she went on to describe some more of it, her baby was a little bit older and some of that persistent gagging. And I was like, whoa, like this sounds like it possibly could be EOE. So part of the reason why we sometimes cover these, you know, less mainstream, maybe a little bit more obscure conditions is because they do occur, right? 1 in 2,000 people is not that obscure. So now, if you're still listening, you know a little bit about EOE. I will put all of Dr. Cianferoni's links, some of the other resources that she mentioned on the show notes for this episode, which you can find at blwpodcast.com/414. A special thank you to our partners at Airwave Media. If you guys like podcasts that feature food and science and using your brain, check out some of the offerings from Airwave. We are online at blwpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Do you find it hard to sleep at night? Then the Sleep Cove podcast can help you. Hi, I'm Christopher Fitton, the voice and clinical hypnotherapist behind Sleep Cove. Sleep Cove features sleep hypnosis, meditations, and bedtime stories, all designed to help those of you who struggle at night to achieve a restful and peaceful night's sleep. Search for Sleep Cove on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and see why Sleep Cove helps millions of people sleep deeply all night long.